We're back on Curious Apes. This is Stephen Parton, and today we are here with an absolutely beautiful soul, one of my favorite people in Portland, Oregon, one of the most beautiful humans I've ever met in my life. Antonio, introduce yourself.
Hey, everybody. I'm Antonio Bonilla.
Today we wanted to talk about polyamory, a new definition of love and relationships that's kind of starting to gain a lot of traction as we kind of shake off some of the shackles of indoctrination. Antonio here has some very good experience in that realm that dwarfs anything I could talk about. So do you want to tell us a little bit about your experiences with polyamory?
Yeah. I've been practicing polyamory for about 8 years now. I was previous to that, I was married. And in a long-term relationship, lasted 7 years. And when we moved to Portland in 2009, our relationship was not romantic anymore or sexual anymore. And so, but we were still friends, we were still in love, and we still, like, were partners. So we tried to open our relationship, and we went to see a counselor, and we read all the books, which there's one book at the time. It was called The Ethical Slut.
It's a great book.
And the term slut is very triggering for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
Because it, like, connotates, like, this kind of direction towards the sexual aspect of relationships. And being an ethical slut is what was previously the name for polyamory. Mm-hmm. Like, polyamory is, like, the more acceptable term right now. Slut is a whole different ethical, like, political situation,
yeah,
of ideas. But polyamory, or, like, you know, many loves, talks about, like, having multiple love relationships versus multiple sexual partners, which is, like, swinging and being a slut and things like that. So it's, like, not, it includes swinging and being a slut as well, but it doesn't preclude not having emotional connections with people the way lots of the society today believes that people with multiple partners do. They're just focused on sex.
Yeah, that's a good point. A lot of the complaints I get about poly when I talk about it, because, you know, I've had some experiences with it myself coming to Portland, you know, trying to try new things since I left Ohio.
Yeah.
And one of the common things that I argued is, you know, with when I'm with somebody, I don't want to feel like my love is owned by another person. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to restrict the fullness of that moment. So, like, if I'm really vibing with somebody, if I just meet somebody and we're like, wow, this is, like, really powerful stuff. And, you know, who knows, like, maybe you're about to leave town after this day, and, like, this is our only chance to spend time together, and, you know, we're just feeling absolutely,
yeah,
into each other. If I'm with somebody in a monogamous relationship, I can't pursue that vulnerability and that intimacy that I want. Now, what a lot of people give me shit for if I say that is that, why do you need to be intimate? Why do you need the sexual intimate aspect? Why can't you just talk? And, you know, I guess in some ways I struggle with an answer for that, but in other ways I kind of still go back to the same initial argument, and it's that the fullness of the experience with this person lies in the vulnerability and lies in the connection, and sex is such a powerful way to tap into that. So it's not really just about the sex as much as it's about exploring the depth of the connection. I don't know if
agreed.
That's...
I mean, I absolutely agreed. And, like, to take it back to the, like, the rhetoric, after Ethical Slut, you have Tristan Tamarino opening up, and then you have More Than Two, mm-hmm, which is a book about, like, being in a triad, and then you have, what is that book? Sex Before Dawn.
Mm. Yeah, Christopher
which talks
Ryan.
About, yeah, Christopher Ryan, which talks about human beings being, like, built for polyamorous relationships, like, chemically.
The external genitalia for,
yeah,
males as part,
yeah,
of, like, a...
As part of a show.
Yes.
You know, as part of a way to visualize who's going to be the better mate, you know, or who's going to be the stronger... Who's give the stronger offspring, which is where sex, like, has evolved from. You,
mm-hmm,
know, reproduction, sex, and then as culture developed, we developed romance. And there was this moment where property, like, physical property, ownership, became, like, the reason for connecting with another person in matrimony, like the word matrimony.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm not even going to break down the etymology of that. You can Google it, but, like, look at these words like marriage, matrimony, husband, wife. They're ownership terms that reduce a human being's, like, multidimensional nature into a singular objectified commodity.
We did, what's it called when you endowment?
Yeah,
you
know what I mean? Like endowment, dowry,
a lot of inheritance. What love is in a lot of cultures is really just about who gets more land and wealth from the marriage, you know?
And then pride and ego come into it where it's like marriage was a system for determining whether or not your offspring who were destined to inherit your wealth were actually your offspring. So if you got married in front of a priest, in front of a room full of both your families, and pledged to never have sex with anyone else, essentially, like that's all you pledge. You promise to never have sex with anyone else, and never bear anyone else's children except this person, never bear children with anyone else except this person, in order to secure like the wealth staying in the legacy of this family name. You know, which was valid and useful for the time, you know, because like...
Amassing wealth in everyone's the only opinion, way to get out of the dirt.
Exactly. In everyone's opinion at the time, that was the best thing to do.
Yes.
And polyamorous relationships have existed and since then and within that and still now. They just didn't call it that.
Right.
You know, they called it affairs. They called it like wenches. They called it prostitution. They call it all kinds of things. But like, can you imagine a world where people don't actually have emotional connections with the people they interact with? Like, I've never had a connection, even with a barista,
Absolutely.
Where it's not somewhat emotional, and you make a connection, and you're slightly vulnerable.
That's a situation I've run into a lot that is kind of one of the things that initially sparked my dislike of monogamy, was when I would meet somebody, and it would be an attractive woman, and, you know, I'm sparking up conversation, and I'm talking to her because I'm attracted to her physically, yes, but I'm also attracted to the image. I mean, first of all, she's a human with a story, and I'm attracted to that just because I want that. So it almost doesn't really matter about the outward persona as long as I see that she carries herself with, like, some sense of vulnerability. But then I go and talk to her, and she's like, oh, I have a boyfriend.
Yeah.
And it's like... It seems very presumptuous about my intent, which is, you know, it's disrespectful in that way. But also, it worries me that this woman has already written off 50% of humanity.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? She's already said no man is allowed to talk to me because another man has claimed ownership over my vulnerability and of my connection.
And that's an acceptable societally, like... valued thing to do. Like you gain social value and social currency when you do that in this world right now.
Yes.
When you can't, there's never been a single president. I mean, every congressperson is probably married. You know, it's like big news if someone's gay and single in the government or in a job or something like that, in a position of power, man or woman or trans person, you know, all the different things. Like it basically like reduces human beings to, you know, chips on a rack in a grocery store.
Well, another line on the resume.
Exactly, yeah.
And it's really unfortunate because it's a line on the resume that strips you of arguably the entire reason to be alive, which is connection with your community. I mean, there's so many studies that are done in terms of the real way to like combat addiction and things like that are with, and depression for that matter, are with human connection.
Yeah, touch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we live in this society that says, you know, get a big yard, put a big fence around it, get one person, seclude yourself away from the rest of the world.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know, maybe just consume a lot of stuff and be a good consumer, I guess. But I mean, that's
amass as much as you can and leave as much behind to someone that you made that is you immortalized in another person so that you'll never die.
Right. So is that part of monogamy? Is part of monogamy
fear of death? Absolutely.
Fear of death, but also like is it a social construct to get people to be good consumers? Is it? I mean, it's obviously a huge result of our Puritan religious backgrounds. Yeah. The fact that we made it so that gay people were unable to marry because the religious people didn't accept it.
Yeah, it's a violent reaction to people connecting in a new way.
Well,
or openly connecting in a new way. And, like, the violent reaction proves that their rhetoric for acting the way they do is something that creates pain for them. They wouldn't try to hold on to it if letting go of it didn't hurt. You know, like, no one's asking anyone who's monogamous to not be monogamous. Monogamy and single partnership with one person is a valid way of loving and works for lots of people. Call it whatever you want. Call it monogamy, polyamory. But, like, the polyamory simply, to me anyway, after the evolution of going through 8 years of, like, trying to have relationships and trying to be with people and trying to have that authentic expression of myself being vulnerable so I can grow in like the way that I want to grow, not the way that the world is forcing me to try to grow through what they put me through, but like putting myself in my chosen vulnerable positions being willing to lose like people in my life that I love, mm-hmm. being willing to like accept people.
It's a huge sacrifice to take on a polyamorous mantle, you know.
That's, yeah, especially at this point in history.
Yes,
it's like not socially accepted. You know, like what if I wanted to marry three people mm-hmm. and we all like wanted to live together and have kids and never be with anyone but the three of us? You know, like what's the difference between that and monogamy? It's just one more person and we're going to have kids and we're going to like, you know, buy a house and we're going to do the fence thing and do the thing. But that's illegal.
Yeah.
And also frowned upon. And also people will talk about you in negative ways and judge you in unfair ways without even thinking about it, because polyamory seems to everyone to mean the opposite of monogamy.
Yeah, it's surprising that the celebration of love's infinitude, you know, the fact that it is this thing that cannot, it doesn't run out. You don't run out of love, you know, you can love more than one person.
But that's an experience. That's an experience that you have to experience in order to believe in.
Yes.
Most people don't get past the mental block of not believing that it's possible to experience it because they don't notice that they love their mother, they love their father, their sister, their brother, their greengrocer, whoever, mm-hmm. and that all of those expressions of their vulnerable, like, authentic self is the expression of love, which comes to, like, the actual definition of polyamory for me means not having many lovers or many loves, but having many definitions of love.
Mm,
having
beautiful.
Multiple definitions of love that allow you to infuse love into each one of your relationships.
Well, and isn't that the beauty of cultivating these many relationships, is that, you know, not, I don't know if I believe one person can bring out every part of you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
and each or meet or your need all your needs at all times.
I mean,
you know?
You might have one person who's deeply spiritual and they fulfill you in the spiritual realm. You might have somebody who's deeply physical who you go on hikes with and who fulfill you in your physical realm. You may have someone that you have great sex with who fulfills you in your sexual realm. And this may not all be in one person, and that's not an insult to the one person. It's just the complexity of our resonance as human beings, like how we as individuals connect. Yeah. Some of us connect in really powerful ways, but only in unique facets. And those facets are usually found in many people. They can be, they have to be.
Yeah,
otherwise, what is dating when we have multiple long-term relationships in our lives? We obviously are connecting in many powerful ways with many people.
Yeah, so back to your question earlier where people would say to you, why do you have to be intimate?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's another word that has more than one meaning that people use for sex.
Mm-hmm.
You mean, why do I have to have sex with them? It's like, no, intimacy is totally a diverse, like, array of experiences that you can, like, infuse. Like, you can infuse intimacy into so many different experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And so when people ask that question, you know, why do you need to be, that's like saying, like, why do you need to, like, celebrate on your birthday? It's like, it's a human right to express yourself. And, like, someone questioning, like, what another person says they need that isn't hurting anyone and is like emotionally developed as an idea for that person, like someone questioning that is like a negative violent response to a person's freedom.
Yes.
Is the definition of oppression.
Yes.
It's very oppressive to like live in a world where like you say you like something, like even a town, a city, a lunchroom, you're the kid in the lunchroom with like the peanut butter and onion sandwich because you're from Africa.
Mm.
And in Africa, sometimes they put like things with peanut butter that they don't do in America. So now you're the odd person out at the lunch table. And all of a sudden, because it's slightly different, everyone else has peanut butter and jelly. You have peanut butter and jalapeno jelly or whatever.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, like, you're causing a ruckus. You're like making everyone else insecure. You're threatening the sanctity of peanut butter and jelly sandwiches.
Well, your freedom,
marriage. Yeah.
It draws to the surface their lack of freedom.
Mm-hmm.
By living so liberated, you draw in their minds the prisons that are holding them back.
From, you shine lights on their prison walls that they're not seeing.
Yeah, and they're an animal thrashing against that light because they don't want to see it.
Yeah.
One topic I wanted to talk to you about a little bit, obviously, I think is a key thing if we're going to discuss polyamory is jealousy and like the sense of having a prime partner. And mm-hmm. also, I think it's, you know, one of the other arguments I think that happens a lot with polyamory is like, how do you make sure that you're not just there for the good with each person
mm-hmm.
and, you know, just moving from the highs that each person has and actually are there for support when someone has a low and ensure that you're not just moving on to the next person once the other person's in a bad way and they're like, oh, you're bringing me down and now I'm going to move on to my other partner that lifts me up or something. Like, so I think I'd like to hear your thoughts on kind of that jealousy topic. And all of that stuff that comes into play there.
Yeah, I think emotion is the most difficult thing for people to grasp their tools. Mm-hmm. Like, it's hard to grasp your emotional tools in romance, in work, in, like, high-stakes relationships. Relationships mm-hmm. where we're taught, oh, there's one person out there for you, there's one perfect job, there's one perfect piece of art you're ever going to make. Like, we get tied to, like, this one thing, and we forget that we have an array of skills that we use every day mm-hmm. that are valid and useful in these high-stress situations. So, like, with feelings, first rule for me is all feelings are valid. A mm-hmm. person has a feeling, whether they can express it verbally or not, whether they express it at the time it happens or afterwards, they're always valid, and they require listening. Like, the way to validate someone's feelings is to listen to them without judgment, without reacting, and without, like, explaining away their feelings by making excuses as to why they're feeling that way or why you're not wrong. Nobody's feelings make anyone else right or wrong.
Right.
They're your feelings. So the first thing that I dealt with in polyamory, like, was jealousy, obviously.
Yeah.
I mean, like, and what all my research and reading tried to prepare me for was the idea that, and it didn't work, I had to go through it first. I had read all the books, but what I had studied and what I'd practiced in my mind was the idea that, like, a jealous feeling, a feeling of jealousy, like, over romance is the same as any other feeling of, like, not having your needs met.
Mm-hmm.
So you're in line for the store and you want your chocolate croissant for breakfast and the person in front of you orders the last one. You're jealous. You're angry. Not because the person's bad, which you could easily do and say that person's a jerk. They know I get it every morning. Why did they take it in front of me? Or that counter guy is a jerk because he knows I get it every morning. He didn't save it for me, you know? Or you could say, like, oh, this pain I'm feeling inside means that I didn't get what I wanted and I maybe can't get it, which is a human condition that we all have to accept.
Yeah.
We might not get the things we want, regardless of how much we deserve it, regardless of how brave we are for asking for it. None of us will get most of the things we want.
That's why the Buddhists, you know, promote non-attachment.
Exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, resistance, judgment, and attachment are, like, the enemies of, like, the mind, you know, like, they stop the mind from being able to control you. Like, if you don't resist, you don't judge, you don't attach. So, like, with jealousy, the first thing I had to do was understand that jealousy is a box of emotions. It's not one thing. Jealousy is a blanket term for, like, an unacceptable, uncontrollable, irrational, sometimes rational emotion that is pointing out a need that needs to be fulfilled and is not in the current moment. My first experience of that was when I started dating two women at the same time for the first time in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them had basically a really important, like, art show. She was in the comic zine symposium. And the other one had nothing going on that night. And I decided, out of, like, respect and love for this new partner that I was having, we've been seeing each other for a couple months. I've been seeing this other person for about a year. I go to their art show, and we spend the whole day doing all the art things, and we really bond. And then they asked me to stay home, to go home with them that night. And I'm like, absolutely. This is, like, the perfect end for the perfect day. And then I get a phone call that says, hey, when are you coming over, from my other partner? And I think to myself, did I double book?
Mm.
Yeah, I double booked. But the logic of it is my already established year-long partner, like, what I wanted from them was for them to be supportive of me connecting with this new person in this mm-hmm. new way. So I said, hey, I'd actually really love to, like, stay with this other person tonight because it's been really bonding and awesome and it's a new relationship and I'll see you tomorrow. You know, we spend more time together than anyone else, you know? And their response to that was, that's unacceptable. Like, you need to get over here right now.
Yeah.
Like, that's wrong of you to, like, she basically pulled the, I'm your primary partner. I'm your first longer standing partner.
Yeah.
So you owe me my need met when I say, at all times. And this is one of those times that I get to pull, at which point I go to my new partner and I say, hey, this is what's happening. And they were actually really supportive despite their jealousy, despite their, like, emotional pain and situation. Mm-hmm. Like, this person looked at me, like, held back the sad, smiled and said, you need to do what you want to do.
Yeah.
Like, you're invited to come back home with me. And if you need to go support your other partner, you should do that if that's what you need to do. And I was like, okay, I'm going to go support my other partner. And they were like, okay, fine. I'll see you later. And then I leave and I go to this other person and we end up fighting all night about like, you know, how angry I am that I didn't get to stay with this person and how angry this person is that I forgot our plans and how, like, I was trying to explain away, like, oh, I forgot your plans because we spent so much time together, which proves that we're in love and all this stuff. And, like, none of that is real. What was real was that, like, one partner needed wanted and expected time mm-hmm. with me. Another partner had offered me to spend more time with me, and I had already accepted, at which point it negated that first partner's thing. So like my one partner's need for companionship was not getting met that night. And then this other person's need for companionship was not getting met that night. And then my need for companionship was not met that night because I made a choice to not follow what I felt I wanted to do like for my integrity. And I didn't have a partner who was well-versed enough to be able to feel supportive of that, mm-hmm. you know? And like, that's a lot different now, but that was like my first experience. And like that jealousy wasn't just like, oh, I want to be with this person or that person. This was like one partner of mine saying, oh, this person's way more artsy and I'm not as artsy. That's why they don't want to spend time with me. And then this person was like, oh, they have a much more deep emotional connection, which means Antonio isn't capable of a deep emotional connection with more than one person, so I shouldn't expect that, which colored the rest of the year of relationship.
But what do you ask of a partner in that situation for their understanding? How do you seek to resolve that when you have three battling forces? Because compromise is already difficult enough with two people.
It's not really compromise, it's boundaries.
Yeah.
You establish boundaries, and like, you don't always know your boundaries at the beginning of a relationship. You know the ones you come in with, and the person hopefully knows the ones they come in with. And then as you grow in love together through accepting each other and not judging each other and not unnecessarily being attached to each other, you learn new boundaries. Like in that instance, one of those boundaries is like, don't double book and then cancel on me. You know, like if you're the kind of person that double books, like I need to make plans with you that are firm. And that you write them down, and I see you write them down. That became her boundaries. Like, let's make a schedule mm-hmm. so that you don't mess this up again.
So that's part of the growth experience.
That's part of the growth experience.
Of engaging in this type of relationship.
Yeah. And then as I moved forward in my relationships, I began to be able to start relationships with these clear statements of my boundaries. Not, oh, I'm going to cancel on you. That's my boundary. But I don't like to associate, in my personal opinion and philosophy, like the amount of time one spends with someone with the quality of the relationship. Yeah. Like the quantity of time does not equal the quality, you know? Like it does in piano. If you play piano for a long time, you're probably gonna be quality, but like this is human interaction.
I feel like that's a side effect, and I don't know if this is making a blanket statement, but you know, I feel like a lot of those kind of issues arise from someone's insecurity with self or lack of personal individualization, where someone's not really found comfort alone. And not always, of course, is that situation. But I feel like one of the reasons that monogamy is such a dominant force and why polyamory is something that's very scary is it means being strong enough in yourself to have someone else go away and for you to say, all right, now I have to figure out how to fulfill time mm-hmm. with myself. Like in some ways we use monogamous relationships as a way to say like, now I'll never have to be alone.
Exactly.
And you know, and I think that's unhealthy because we need to learn how to be alone.
Not only do we need to learn how to be alone, we need to learn how to deal with jealousy. We need to learn mm-hmm. how to deal with anger. We need to learn how to deal with insecurity. And like, what better way? Like, that's why they send kids to school, to socialize, to mm-hmm. be teased, to be picked on, to be appreciated, so they can learn how they respond to all of these things, because that's the norm in the real world.
We need to learn how to deal with our lack of control.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're in a relationship where the whole reason it exists is the controlling of another person, then I think you're probably inviting a lot of really dangerous turmoil into the relationship.
I mean, I think that's true a lot of times, but other times people totally get into those ownership based like addictive relationships mm-hmm. where they just need a person, and they call that serial monogamy.
Yes.
You know, where they go through
the honeymoon phase.
Yeah, they go the honeymoon phase, which in the polyamorous world or ethical non-monogamy world is called new relationship energy, where mm-hmm. when you meet a person for the first time and you start connecting that way for a few months or maybe even a year, maybe two.
So much to learn.
There's so much energy between you two that like other energies that you have in your life, other people like lower their frequency.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they get less time, maybe they don't. Maybe they get less attention, maybe they don't. But the feeling of the invigoration of like finding a new partner, learning a new skill, going to a new place, anything like that, anything you bring into your environment that's going to help you grow even faster and stronger and better is exciting to you.
I think that's always been one of the hardest parts about monogamy for me is cutting off the chance to experience that with people, because that is such a euphoric state of being.
Yeah. I mean, it's a drug to some people.
Yeah, I mean, it's totally a drug. It's the revitalization of the oxy in your body, just releasing all this cuddle hormone and all this new love energy. And
yeah, there's a term I love all the new terms that polyamory is bringing into the world. There's a term called the kid in the candy store phase.
Okay.
Where anyone who starts being poly for the first time, or like opens up their marriage for the first time, like they just want to have sex with everybody. They want to date everybody. They want to be in love with everybody. And for the first year of me being polyamorous, first 2 years, like I was kid in the candy store.
Yeah.
I was on OkCupid. I was on what before was Tinder. And going out to bars and meeting people and going to poly meetups and groups and kink parties and being like, hey, I'm polyamorous. Let's all be friends and be in love with each other and have sex and like go to each other's houses and make brunch and I'm going to meet your parents or no, not yours, but let's make music together and things like that.
And it shifted.
Yeah, it shifted. I hurt a lot of people's feelings and a lot of people hurt my feelings or we all got our feelings hurt. Everyone's feelings get involved in things. And I think monogamy doesn't avoid that.
Yeah.
Polyamory doesn't exacerbate it either. I think it's a natural part of relating with people is like making mistakes, having your boundaries crossed, crossing other people's boundaries, and then learning and growing into the future, hopefully with those same people or with new people in a better way.
Well, so what do you think the future is of polyamory? Because in some ways I view polyamory as like this this really powerful sign that we're kind of evolving our consciousness, because I think it shows an emotional intelligence. And not to say that people who are monogamous have a lower emotional intelligence. I just think that the fact that we're bringing this new form of relationship paradigm into existence and really championing it in some really healthy ways shows a lot of our ability to set aside ego. And that's not something that Western culture has been very good at. So as we move forward with things like OkCupid, with things like Tinder, like things with virtual reality where we might have virtual reality sex with multiple partners where even, you know, the avatar that you have might not, I mean, we might have people who go online as women when they're men, who might go online as
as androgynous,
like, like who you're having sex with and your sexuality and your gender become non-existent things. So what do you think in terms of polyamory? Do you think this is something that's going to grow? Do you think it's something that we're moving more towards? Do you think it's something that is part of a bigger revolution happening? Or do you think it's always going to remain kind of a big subculture?
I think, as I said before, I believe it's been going on forever.
Yeah.
I believe people have been able to communicate with each other since communication started. And I feel like people have been able to make agreements with each other that like allow them to have their needs met in ways, whether they talk about it or not, with each other. I believe everyone's been already doing this, and monogamy is not different. You know, like what I think is happening revolutionarily is that the idea of love is changing. Like, it doesn't really matter how people express love, in my opinion. Like, there's people that are asexual, you know, that aren't attracted to anyone, but they love having sex because they know it makes other people feel good.
Yeah.
You know, everyone thinks asexual, oh, you don't have sex. Like, no, you just don't get any pleasure from it.
Yeah.
You know, and there's, you know, sapiosexual people, people that only feel attraction to intelligence and all these things. And what I think is happening is that the idea of love and the idea of relationships is expanding to fit in the already existing subcultures that have been here forever underneath the tyranny of, like, patriarchal monogamy, you know, like, and we'll say like patriarchal monogamy is like the bad monogamy.
Yes.
You know, monogamy is not bad at all. So it just means having one partner, you know, that you're with, partnered with for the rest of
your
life.
Which is beautiful if that's, if that's.
Me and Lawrence are in a monogamous art relationship. My writing partner, Lawrence Whiteside, we are together, you know, like we're not sexual. We're not romantic. We're mostly friends, but we make art together.
Yeah.
And that is more important to us than anything that happens in our relationship, and nothing is going to stop us from doing that. And that, to me, is like my deepest love relationship in my life so far.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a person that I don't even have sex with.
Yeah.
I don't sleep next to you. You know, like, we went camping a couple times and shared a tent, and that was it. You know, there's no, like, desire for anything other than, like, the expression of our deepest inner selves and our purpose through communication and connection with each other. And that's love to me. And so what I think is, like, where I think it's going is the constructs, the mental and legal constructs of, like, single partner relationships being the societal norm is going to break down.
Mm-hmm.
Multiple marriage is going to become legal, at which point marriage will become a joke and or a religious ceremony with, like, specific significance to certain people.
Yes.
And it will maintain its beauty and value in the world, and the value and beauty of it will change to something probably way better than what it is now.
Yeah, it'll probably become more pure because it won't be so oppressive.
Yeah. It won't be based on ownership and about passing legacy on. It'll be based on expressing your connection to another person, to the world.
Yeah.
Like to wear a ring, to get in front of all your friends and pledge your love to another human being and say, we are going to be in a situation together and we want you to witness, like the most beautiful marriages I've been to lately, like are just my friends standing up in front of each other saying, we want all of you people we love to witness how much we love each other and how that love is now all of ours.
That's beautiful.
It's all of ours. And these are ancient Celtic weddings I've been to that have been happening since before Christianity.
Yeah.
You know? And so, like, you think about it, and I think we're witnessing the fall of culture. You know? Yeah. We're witnessing the fall of, like, a certain kind
which
of culture.
Which I think is so good, because I think that may be the most attractive thing about it to me is when I engage in relationships where we kind of set this... I know open relationships and polyamory are very different things, but when we kind of set that tone... We came to the relationship not with a set of rules given to us by our society, but we simply looked at each other and we said, hey, we get to just define this however we want. What do we as individuals want this to look like? And it just made it so much more meaningful and real to know that the other person had put their feelings and their intention right up front and said, hey, like, I don't care if you make out with somebody else, because I want to make out with other people or something. Yeah. But, you know, after that, maybe beyond making out, we need to talk about it, because then there's, like, issues of, like, STDs and things like that, and then we want to be careful, or that's taking it to something else. But the fact that we get to draw the line, you know, and make sure that each person feels fulfilled as an individual and as a partner, and it's customized to each relationship, I think that's what's really beautiful is taking away the labels and redefining love for each person that you share love with.
Agreed. Yeah, there's an amazing sex and sexuality coach in Portland, Eva Blake, who I've met a couple times and been to a couple workshops with, and she has this thing she says every time. She says we use tools, not rules. So relationships, like the rules of a relationship, it's like, are you playing a game? Is there a winner and a loser? That's where you need rules.
It's feels but very
what are you
combative.
What are you doing? You're building something with somebody. What? How do you build things with tools?
Yeah.
You know, with tools and plans and intention and mistakes and growth. Like, you know, like tools are what you use to create your boundaries and enforce your boundaries, and like tools are what you build with your life with.
Yeah.
You know, and we have tools we all know how to do. We have tools only certain people can do, and there's some tools that like nobody can use.
Yeah.
There's some things none of us can do emotionally.
But we can learn how to use these tools, and that's super powerful.
Yeah, we can make tools, you know, like that's like the
that's
power
what
of
we
the
do.
Human beings.
That's what we
you
do.
Know, we
yeah.
make tools. And so like I think we're in the emotional spiritual era, like the burgeoning beginning, like proto like movement of the emotional and spiritual revolution, I think is like happening now. Like they'll talk about it in 100 years. Be like, man, back in like 1997 or 1995 when Salt and Pepper had that song, Let's Talk About Sex, you know, and how every hip hop song after that mentioned when they were having sex, rubbers and condoms and safety. Yeah. That's not a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
That's an artist using their tools. Like Snoop Dogg cares about people getting STIs or not. He cares about teen pregnancy. You know, and he'll say that if you talk to him as a person, but in his song, he's just going to say, I got a pocket full of rubbers and my homeboys do too.
Yeah.
That's respect for women's
and
health.
And that completely changes.
That's
the,
not
that
misogynistic.
That completely changes
yeah.
the paradigm of sexuality for young men listening to this music.
Absolutely.
Like, damn, my idol carries around rubbers.
Exactly.
Like,
I should too.
Sex.
Yeah.
Like,
exactly. So
it's
very
powerful.
I think we're at the beginning of like the emotional spiritual revolution of love, of self-love, of relationships, and of like how we love our planet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because like the primary relationship we all have, everyone says, oh, it's the relationship with yourself. I think the primary relationship we all have as physical beings in reality is our relationship with our environment.
Mm-hmm.
That's one. If you can't survive your environment, you don't get to do the other stuff as a human. And until we like move backwards and backwards from, you know, our relationship with God to our relationship with the government to our relationship with our friends and family to our like lovers and then to ourselves and then to the earth.
Mm-hmm.
Earth is first, you know, so that's where I think we're headed. Hopefully in the next 100 or 20 or 1,000 years, maybe not in my lifetime, but that's my revolution.
Maybe in your like, lifetime, let's hope so.
Yeah, I hope
Well, I think that's a pretty good spot to wrap it up. Yeah. Do you have any closing thoughts?
I'm really happy to be on Curious Apes podcast.
Very happy to have you, man.
And I just want to, thank you so
awesome.
Much, Steven.
Well, that's it for polyamory with Antonio. Use your tools. Don't use rules. Love is infinite. Yeah, and let's just carry that message. Thank you for watching.
Thanks, folks.